Jen Zamperali on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.
My next guest is the author of a book. It's called Exit Stage Left. It's a book that explores the life of pop stars when they stop writing hits. The interesting part. Once they stop appearing in the charts, the media usually lose a bit of interest. So what happens? What happens to them? Well, Nick Durden is on the line. Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Thanks for doing this. How's life?
Well, thank you for having me. It's okay.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's pouring down with rain here. So at the weekend I was sunbathing and now it's raining.
I know,
so I'm adjusting
slowly.
It's
all a bit mad. Where is home for you, Nick? Where are you based?
London.
Oh, lovely. Okay. Nick, why did you decide to write this book?
I've been a music journalist for a long time. I think I started in the early 1990s. So I've been lucky enough to interview bands and acts at the beginning of their career, but then also in the middle, and then in some cases towards the end. And I remember reading something that Bob Dylan once said, that artists tend to write their best songs between the ages of 23 and 27. And I became increasingly fascinated to know, well, what's it like when you're 28 and then 38 and in your 50s? Because I guess what I found is that people, pop stars, don't really stop. They just keep carrying on. And I wanted to learn what life was like for them out of the spotlight.
Was Bob Dylan right?
Well, kind of yes and no. I think when bands start, you know what that youthful energy is like. So when we hear, you know, a brand new band, whether it's Sex Pistols in the 70s or One Direction two generations later, it just sounds absolutely necessary what they are doing. After about 5 years, that early momentum kind of fizzles out and it just settles down into a job. It's a 9-to-5 job. It doesn't necessarily keep those hours. So yeah, that energy has gone and it becomes something slightly different. It doesn't mean the songs are any worse. In many cases, they're better because they, you know, they're more experienced. But our relationship with an act changes as that act gets older. Not always for the worse either.
Sure, exactly. Who did you chat to and why did you choose?
Well, I asked them. I asked lots and lots of people. Okay. It was just as the lockdown was happening. So a lot of rock and pop stars who may have been out on tour were suddenly at home twiddling their thumbs. So I put out lots and lots of emails. And in the end, 50 very kind and gracious people got back to me. And I suppose I've spoken to people from the late 60s to the early noughties. So everyone from Robbie Williams to the Happy Mondays, KLF, Roisin Murphy, Joan Armatrading, Dave Stewart from the Eurythmics, Rufus Wainwright, Frankie Goes to Hollywood, and many more.
Was there a common thing between all of them? I mean, obviously all being pop stars, but what happens when they stop writing hits for a certain period? Was there something that was blatantly obvious that you thought, oh, well, they're all going through that?
Just the business. I spoke to Bob Geldof and he was very good, predictably, talking about it. And he said that when he got to 30, you know, the hits had run out, but he hadn't stopped writing hits. They just stopped becoming hits and he couldn't understand why. He thought they were as good as they always had been. But the record companies had shifted their gaze onto, you know, the newer acts coming up. And he was thinking, well, what do I do now with the rest of my life? And a lot of the bands I spoke to had similar experiences that, you know, music, I suppose, is dominated by fad and fashion. So if it suddenly shifts onto something else, so Britpop was very popular from, late 93 till about 97. After that, it was gone. So all those bands who were associated with it were suddenly out the door. And I spoke to a couple of them for the book and they were thinking, well, hang on, we're only just getting going. But it's the scene moves on and kind of leaves them behind.
And if
they have had a few hits in that genre, it's very kind of difficult to reinvent yourself and do something else, because we only know them for what we know them for, those two or three hits.
Nick, were any of them prepared for it? Because we see it now with footballers, you know, and they retire very early in life for a career they've been so focused on. And you do hear time and time again, there are bouts of depression and a feeling of being lost. I think they're a little bit more prepared now. They know, so they're focusing on other aspects of their life. But are these pop stars that were they prepared for the inevitable?
The younger they are in the book, the more prepared they are. I think because they are learning from previous generations. So in the 60s and the 70s, music was still fairly brand new. So they had no idea how they were going to last. And a lot of them were taken to the cleaners by managers and accountants. You know, a lot of their accountants seemed to end up on a beach in Rio. And the record companies didn't treat them as well as perhaps they could have been. So a lot of the pop stars I spoke to from the 80s and the 90s suffered burnout because there was no such thing as mental health back then. Nobody talked about it. So a lot of them said that if they could only have taken 6 months off, they would have been so much better. It would have been better for their music and for themselves. And I get the sense that nowadays people are learning. So many of these stories in the book are essentially cautionary tales. I don't think Taylor Swift, for example, or Ed Sheeran or Billie Eilish will burn out in the same way that a band in the 80s and 90s did, because they've seen what happens and they know how to build in a greater awareness into their lives and also into their contracts, so they're not run ragged.
Yeah, and years ago, they would have just kept going. But now you see the likes of Lewis Capaldi and Sam Fender cancelling tours to look after their mental health. Like, that is...
Yes.
Weirdly,
would never
is quite,
have happened.
It would have never have happened. So can we talk about achieving success in music, like, really early on in a career? What's the downside of achieving such huge success? Like Robbie Williams, for example, 16 when he joined the band. Huge success.
Yeah, I think Robbie Williams is one of those exceptions that prove the rule, that he went on to have a really good career and now seems a really good life. But when you have success that young, the same with, you know, with One Direction, they don't really know a real life in the same way that you or I would know it. So
that's true.
I guess if you've had all of your dreams come true by the age of 20, then why would you not expect those dreams to continue coming true forever? So when they abruptly don't, it's almost like they've fallen back down to earth and it takes them a while to learn how to breathe, much less to exist. So I think, yeah, success too early can be really quite damaging. And of the many people I interviewed in the book who took a time to get successful, they were all grateful for it. You know, in hindsight, they were glad it didn't take off on the first album, because that just sends you crazy. Fame sends you crazy.
Are there pros and cons to writing a one-hit wonder?
Because
I often hear these songs and go, oh, whatever happened?
Yes.
Whatever happened to them?
Yes. And the thing is, they're still there. And we know that they're still there now because of the internet. They're always out there, essentially waving to us from the periphery of our vision, saying, look, I've got new music. Come and listen to it. It's good. So it's a very strange thing if you have a one-hit wonder, because you are kind of preserved in aspect for all those who only know that song from you. And they don't know. I always wondered, if you've written that such a great song, surely you can write one again. And why didn't you? And of all the people in the book who may have had one or two hits only, they said, but I didn't write a one-hit wonder. I wrote 21 hits. 20 hits. They were all brilliant. It's just that you lot only bought the first one and I couldn't tell you why. So on one sense, you know, the upside is that for many of these bands, they will constantly have a source of income because of that song, because Stranger Things uses it in the soundtrack, or because it advertises a credit card on TV. And that allows them to tour essentially forever. There are people in the book I've spoken to who had one hit in 1978 and they are still living off the proceeds today. So it's not great if you only have one hit, but I can think of worse fates in life.
Out of all the people you spoke to for the book, does the appeal of fame diminish for them, or are they still all chasing that in some shape or form? Is it like,
is it like an
addiction?
Yes, I think it is. I think what I learned is that you can't really walk away from music easily. Music has a habit of calling you back. So if you have been on stage and had thousands of people cheering you, I can only imagine that must be quite a nice thing. So they want more of it. And Robbie was quite a good example in the book in that he was addicted to it. You know, he's got quite an addictive personality. So if it wasn't drink and drugs in the early days, it was fame. And then it was coffee. And then it was number one albums and number one singles. But he seems to have adjusted to life in his late 40s. He's now a happily married man with four kids. He hasn't released a studio album, I don't think, for something like 7 or 8 years. Whereas before, if he hadn't had an album out every 2 years, he wouldn't have known what to do with himself. So I think he had enough of fame and enough of success to think, it's always there if I want to go and pick it back up again. It may not be on the same level, But Robbie will never not be playing arenas and stadiums. And correspondingly, with all the other people who I interviewed in the book who aren't perhaps as successful, they will always have a crowd there waiting for them and will be happy to buy whatever they come out with next.
After speaking to all
these
people.
It's a job for life, I think, is what I found.
Really?
It's a job for life in one way or another.
And what else did you learn from the book and speaking to all these people?
That they are, pop stars are an unusually tenacious bunch of people. You know, these are people who went out and made their dreams come true. And that never happened by accident. So they are a determined bunch. And when fad and fashion does move away from them, they don't go anywhere. They just wait patiently for fad and fashion to come back round as it does. You know, my 17-year-old daughter is now dressing like a member of the All Saints, which is probably good news for the four members of All Saints. So it will come back round and find them. So they don't really have to go anywhere. And I kind of finished the book in huge admiration for what it takes to be a career pop star, because it's not easy.
They're more resilient than we think. And it's
they
not
are.
Just
they
about
really,
luck,
I mean, yeah.
They have to be. It sounds like they do have to be. I never, ever forget that comment Robbie Williams said. I think it was on some kind of chat show, maybe Graham Norton. He said, "You never lie back in the bath and think, I'm famous enough now." That was his comment. "I'm famous. That's just the right amount of fame for me right now."
Yeah.
Which is one of the dangers. So it's all, you know, you have to keep your head above water. And I would say, you know, you have to be to have sustainability and to keep going. You need to be a good business person as well.
Yeah, and that's what I think people like Taylor Swift and Ed Sheeran are really doing now. They are CEOs of their, they're business people. They are controlling their careers. In the past, record companies controlled your career. Record companies were the one to say, no, we don't want you anymore. Next, come along. But, you know, Chris Martin knows exactly what he's doing. Adele knows exactly what she's doing, and she will be doing the dictating, not being dictated to. So I think finally, we are being slightly kinder to our pop stars and realizing that behind those sunglasses, there is a kind of deeply sensitive human being there.
And let's not forget it. Nick, really interesting stuff. Thank you so much. The book is called Exit Stage Left. It's a great read. Go and check it out.
Jen Zamparelli on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.